Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the podcast here today. I'm really excited about our guest, Mr. Rahul Patel. He's an attorney here in San Antonio, Texas. Lots of stuff to say about Rahul, kind of by way of an intro. He's a managing partner of Patel Gaines Law Firm. He's an NBA agent. He's done a ton of commercial real estate stuff, property tax litigation, and has been featured in a ton of publications, Forbes, Fortune, Business Week, Texas Lawyer, and the list really kind of goes on. But I'm really excited to have him on the show today to talk about San Antonio, talk about his unique perspective here. But without further ado, Rahul Patel, welcome. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on. I always get excited when I can pay somebody a few bucks and make up a nice intro like that. So I appreciate you doing I appreciate the intro, and it's an honor to be on your podcast. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we've got listeners all over the country, or I guess all over the world, but we've got a lot of folks in San Antonio too. They're either investors or other operators or aspiring real estate investors, et cetera. But, you know, you guys have a big presence here. We're always seeing you in the Business Journal, very active in real estate, but would love to kind of get your take on your background and how you started the firm. And, you know, for folks that are not already in your universe, how did you kind of get to where you guys are today?
Well, you know, it's awesome. So I've been in San Antonio for about 10 years. I moved here from the north. I grew up in Ohio, got tired of the cold, and really just packed up my bags and moved to Texas. I think like many folks have probably now, as you listen to the stories, have migrated from other parts of the country, which is, I think, what makes San Antonio really a pretty cool place, because it's a place that's got a lot of heritage, a lot of history. But it's really a hodgepodge from all over the country, right? So the dynamic, right. The culture, the food, just the things and the activities that are happening in San Antonio, I think truly are really pretty exciting, because you're seeing people from all over really starting to take part of what makes San Antonio so great. So, you know, I mean, that's a little bit of my background. Moved here. I went to law school. I grew up in the real estate world, in the sense that my family, was in the lodging business, much like the hospitality. I'm in the hospitality industry, which is, you know, multifamily is another kind of offshoot of that. So I grew up in that. So I really saw stuff from, you know, buying a property, renovating it, adding value, and then from ground up development. So I had a lot of real estate background, and then just, you know, started at a large real estate and litigation firm. And actually, I did a lot of litigation to start off my legal career. And I think that's been a tenement to what we've done at this firm, too, is really get an understanding of both sides of the fence. And if you understand both sides, it can help you in whatever kind of arena you're going in. And much like multifamily or real estate, if you understand the full spectrum of how the cycle may work, you're going to be better versed in your own business, whether you end up becoming a side that, you know, is primarily looking at, you know, the disposition side, whether it's the acquisition side, whatever that might be, or the management side. When you have at least a ground level understanding of everything that goes into it, I feel like you end up becoming a much better player in whatever arena you go in. So, you know, a little bit about us, that's how we got started. And then we've really moved heavily into real estate and tax litigation. And that's been the genesis of what's fueled a lot of our firm growth over the past few years. But guys that for, you know, our team has got a lot of real estate experience. From legal perspective, but actually having done deals in our lives and throughout our lives. So we kind of understand our clients' positions a little bit better than most. So it's been fun. And the multifamily area that you're in right now is such a fun industry from so many perspectives. I can jump into that. But that's a little bit in a nutshell about myself and our background.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Appreciate the context there and the overview. So you mentioned something that certainly piques my interest, and that's property taxes and kind of protesting them. I grew up in San Antonio and have been investing here for a lot of years, and we've kind of seen this hockey stick growth on the on the tax assessments that are coming out year over year. What's the lay of the land there? What are you guys seeing, and what are you kind of expecting over the next couple of years in San Antonio on these tax assessments coming in?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's a statewide problem, just a San Antonio problem. We represent about $9 billion of real estate here in South Texas for property tax appeals for litigation. So I'll tell you, when you have a number with like $9 billion, you'll realize that this is an issue not just for one company or one product type, a lot.
Sure.
Multifamily specifically, and a few other types of industries, the storage center industry, and office have been hit particularly hard. There's been a lot of activity in multifamily, a lot of value add type activity, ground up activity, you name it. It's a hot arena. And when you see activity, you'll see increases. And so there's multiple effects of that from property tax perspective, you know, sales, can oftentimes dictate value, but you know what, or market value, right?
Right.
But much like your home, I mean, your neighbor could sell your house, could sell their house and move, and another person could buy it, and a few of your neighbors could move in and around you. But if you're not on the market to sell and you've bought a piece of real estate to hold, well, there's really no market, right? There's no market value if somebody's kind of come to you and want to buy you and you're not interested because you've got a 5-year hold on your agreements. Well, Texas has an annual reappraisal. So you're going to get reappraised and assessed at a market value, even if that is not truly the value that you would be moving at, because it's just not for sale. So we've seen a big increase. Litigation has increased. Last year, you know, we filed over 400 tax lawsuits. So this is becoming a real issue, particularly for a lot of out-of-state buyers or first-time folks that are underwriting a deal based on its prior assessment. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a $15, $16 million assessment. They purchase it for $26 million. They have underwritten it based on the financials that are there, except the next year they're going to get a $10 million increase on their tax bill, right? So $270,000 increase will completely negate their underwriting efforts. So it is a major issue. We have been on the front lines of litigation in most of the counties. So we've got a good handle on it, and we've helped clients really kind of aggressively maintain those kind of flat line type minimal increases year over year, which is in Texas, it's pretty much necessary to go down that route if you want to kind of hold that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly what we're seeing too. And, you know, we used to underwrite to, I mean, years ago, 85% of purchase price, then 90, then 95. And now sometimes we're happy if it's coming in, the assessment's coming in anywhere under contract price.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of ways to help mitigate that. You know, especially in Texas, I know, you know, your listening reach is obviously, you know, broader than just Texas, but in Texas, it is something that if you don't have a good strategy and plan for, a true good strategy and plan, you're going to have some tough times kind of monitoring that. I mean, it's a 3% tax rate. And when you look at that number, that could be a very big percentage of your NOI, and you have not accounted for it. You may not have to account for it in certain states like you will in Texas. So it is very important to kind of understand, you have a strategy, you have a strong strategy for that, and make sure that you keep vigilant on that. So we do a lot of multifamily. We represent, I would say, probably about 100+ apartment complexes just in this region for these types of appeals, because it is a you know, whenever the market's well in something, you're going to see increases in these arenas, right? So
yeah, of course. I mean, you're not going to. It's painful, but you're not going to win both sides of the coin at the same time, right? You're not going to see all this great positive net migration, rent growth, you know, asset appreciation, and keep your taxes where they were in 2010. It's just not realistic. So, got to find other ways to make it pencil. But that's a great overview, and you know, certainly the tax protest strategy is something you've got to have in your toolkit as an owner, as an operator. What are you guys doing? You know, with a San Antonio base, you guys built a really nice office here. What's kind of your outlook for commercial and for multifamily, kind of looking ahead 2 years into the future in San Antonio?
You know, I think it's the outlook. I think the outlook is positive, especially particularly for San Antonio compared to others. Cost of living is still very, very, very reasonable. Right. So I think anytime you have an attractive cost of living, you're in a good position for that. I think that we're truly the central hub right now, even more so than I would say Austin. Austin's fantastic, nothing to take away from them. But I think we're going to be more resilient to market changes because we are not so tech-centric. We're, I think, the gateway from North Texas, Austin, all the way down to Monterrey, Mexico, where we're just seeing activity. So we're a great hub. I think that San Antonio hits that dynamic because it's still, again, like I said, very affordable and a growing city. I think the city of San Antonio, as a city with the Economic Development Foundation, the city of San Antonio, and kind of some of the things that they're doing to try to attract the type of employment and employer bases here, I think is very strong. They've got a good strategy. I mean, everyone has a mission and a mantra, but they actually have a solid strategy behind it. If you look at what's happening with Velocity Texas, just that incubator that they have going on with all the activity that's happening around the Pearl and the Pearl Brewery District, and with what the EDF is putting together, I think it is fantastic. We have a strong concentration of universities in San Antonio. So anytime you have that, you've got the opportunity. So I think San Antonio is a market for the next, you know, near future, I think is very strong from that perspective. I think from the other standpoint, though, when you have a strong market, you're starting to really see, I think you've seen it, but over the last couple of years, it has accelerated. San Antonio is probably a secondary market for many folks, a tertiary market even for some folks, right? Not even on the radar for New York, LA, Chicago-based type companies that weren't even looking at San Antonio. But I think as the market has accelerated, competition has accelerated, you're starting to see activity in what I would call, I would not say second San Antonio's truly a secondary or tertiary market, but they're starting to look here. And as they started to look here, they've started to see opportunity. And as you start to see opportunity, you see more and more people coming into San Antonio that never would have come to San Antonio 5 years ago for an acquisition, right? They were looking at Dallas and Houston and Austin. Obviously with Houston having, you know, just such an impact over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, volatility with the oil and gas industry, recently with all the issues related to the hurricane that have happened, I think, you know, we're really starting to elevate San Antonio as a promising market that we probably didn't see 2 years ago. So I think for folks that are looking for deals and deal flow, I think it's going to become more challenging to find opportunities for them to really kind of get in there and do some good work. So I think that's where the due diligence, having a strong team, having folks like yourself that really understand the market and the dynamics, and then balancing these little these factors that could go under the radar, like property tax, weren't as important, but now are becoming very, very important in order to really truly see the same types of returns that people were seeing before.
Yeah, so many great points to unpack there. I mean, I think your last point about investor expectations. I mean, I think we've got to kind of temper that with what we're looking at. We had dinner last weekend with some friends downtown at a nice trendy restaurant down near the Pearl that you mentioned. And I'm looking around going, wow, there's a lot of young people here. There's a lot of energy. I mean, it's just a completely different downtown scene than it has ever been in my lifetime here. Yep. So it's exciting to see that. With that, of course, comes, you know, more eyes on San Antonio, more acquisition interest. Cap rates is one that we're kind of scratching our heads on going, you know, it's not 2014 anymore. You know, we may not be able to underwrite, you know, an 8 exit cap on a deal anymore. And so, you know, that's to your point, you know, we're really having to get very good and rely on our broker relationships to find that diamond in the rough of a deal that makes sense. And at the same time, kind of tempering investor expectations that, you know, that our IRR projections could be a little bit lower than it has been in the past, but still a great risk-adjusted return, just maybe a little bit different profile because of the changing landscape here in San Antonio. I wanted to touch base, Raul, on cap rates. I mean, you guys, you've been doing commercial real estate for a long time. You guys are deeply involved in it. What's, you know, we're seeing cap rates kind of creep down into the fives and the fours. What is your kind of philosophy on that? And what are you guys seeing people do as far as underwriting and kind of reversion cap rates and that kind of thing?
You know, it's interesting. So, you know, obviously when we talked about when activity increases, there's just a lot of capital out there right now too. I mean, right. You know, there's with things like, I mean, just with the activity of with transactions, 1031 exchanges are picking up, opportunity zone. We could probably have a little discussion on that, in and of itself, but you know, there's just so many different vehicles that are being created by this, that when capital is out there, it creates competition. And when competition is increased, obviously you will see certain compression of things and that's causing, you know, higher value. And when you see higher values, people are transacting. And so I think, you know, when it comes to cap rates, lots of things. I mean, you know, I think what might be foolish for one person to acquire at a certain cap rate could be a perfect deal for another. So what I always try to tell folks when they're doing deals and they come to us and they come to, you know, Drew primarily at our team, who really heads up the multifamily real estate transaction of our team, we always really try to sit down and understand what their objectives are, short term, long term, and what they've set their investors up in terms of expectation, both, you know, input and output, to really identify, you know, to be successful. So, you know, and what I say about that is you could buy something at a, you know, five cap at X dollars and say that's just absurd. Because if you got a certain strategy with fees and, you know, maybe it's a value add asset that you're going to go in and put dollars into, and your rental increases that you're expecting can't happen or don't happen, then, you know, it may not make any sense. But somebody who has a strong plan position to do that, it might make perfect sense. So, you know, to me, it's just a function of value. And then have you done enough reverse engineering of that value for it to make sense for you and your setup and your makeup, right? If you've got, I know I may not have answered your question about specific cap rates. To me, I think it's more about, does it make sense for what you are doing and how you have set it up versus whether that cap rate is something that you should buy, right? So what's a good deal is different for everybody, right? If you're coming in as a cash buyer and you're going to do a 10-year hold, it might not matter what the cap rate you buy it at, right? But if you've got LPs, you've got a 3-year exit, and you've got some waterfalls that you need to hit before you make anything, you've got GP fees, and you've got you may not ever hit your targets. So it's that's how I look at cap rates and value, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's, I appreciate the feedback. And, you know, it's a little bit of an unfair question on the cap rates, because I think everybody's tendency is to want to kind of commoditize this thing and make it easier to wrap your head around. Well, really, I mean, every deal is its own animal for sure. There's different variables, even on two apartment complexes across the street from each other. I mean, it's not a commodity. It's highly specific and individualized, even within the same, you know, submarket. So that's good feedback. And there's definitely different buyer profiles out there, to your point. You know, we're always looking for that California 1031 buyer to come in and pay top dollar for our property on the exit. And sometimes that does happen. So totally depends on the plan for the asset. And we've seen so many different types of buyer profiles that the same deal might make sense for somebody where it doesn't make sense for us or vice versa. Beyond the property tax protests that you guys are heavily involved with, if somebody's coming to your firm commercial real estate investor, multifamily investor, like maybe some of our listeners, what other kind of suite of services are you guys able to give that investor?
You know, for us, we're a business firm. We can consider ourselves a pro business real estate and litigation firm. So the three major buckets we assist in, property tax, that's been an incubator for us as a firm. We have obviously, you know, when you handle property tax, we've been doing it for 10 plus years at a very high rate. You learn a lot about a person's business, right? Because they have to oftentimes, and in most instances, share with you profit and loss statements, occupancy reports, you know, deferred maintenance reports, insurance claims, everything that says, here's what's going on with my property and why I think it should be valued at X versus Y, you learn about, right? And you know those.
Right.
So you don't just learn, hey, it should be valued at 10. You have to learn why it needs to be valued at a number in order to truly understand what it is. At the flip side, the appraisal district is telling you what they think it should be worth. So you're learning right. cap rates, you're learning everything that happens to deal with the real estate. And so that's also fueled our real estate branch of our firm and Drew's team in real estate, because truly we have a deeper understanding a lot of times of what's going on and whether things make sense. So oftentimes as legal counsel, you have a tendency, again, and you kind of mentioned earlier this building. We built our own building, 20,000 square foot building. So when you talk about real estate lawyers, many real estate attorneys have never built anything themselves. So they don't know they can tell you whether there should be an easement there or not and advise you to litigate. But sometimes it's better to pay 15 grand and to work a deal out with your neighbor than it is to fight over it, right? Because you get benefited to make money on the legal side to fight. But in all reality, it's a better cost of underwriting in that perspective than shake hands and move on. So sure. I think for us, the buckets have been those three: real estate, property tax. And then the last is litigation. I touched on it at the beginning. I think really I have an understanding of all of our attorneys, even our real estate attorneys, have all done an extensive amount of litigation. And I think what that does is helps you avoid things for your clients from the real estate perspective that they are either trying to do, not purposefully or maliciously, just feel like, oh, well, this is the deal I struck. This is what I want to do. And many attorneys tend to become yes men. And I think for us, what separates us in those buckets is the relationships that we have found to be most successful are the ones that we end up kind of being that, you know, hey, what the heck are you doing here? This doesn't make any sense. Have you looked at this? Like, did you read through these docs? Like, this is, you know, or you promised your LP this and this is what this says and vice versa. So, or your lender's not giving you that. So it's some of that, like, you pay somebody, in my opinion, and whether it's us or somebody else, you pay an attorney not to be your yes man, to do whatever it is you tell them to do. You should be paying your attorney to be your devil's advocate, but then helping you achieve your goal, right? And I think to us, I think those are the three buckets: property tax, real estate, and litigation. And within that, there's so many offshoots that we've helped folks out with, whether it's insurance claims, issues with employment matters with their management companies, or you know, with their apartment complex, you name it. We've gone through those things. We've a few apartment developers have hired us to handle litigation for construction issues. Right? They bought a sure. had brand new up ground up construction having issues post warranty. Just disclosure issues. So many different things, but you know, we kind of consider ourselves, business attorneys in the sense that we don't do estate planning. We don't do immigration. We don't do criminal law, but if it comes to your business or your real estate, we can help you out with most of your problems.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I appreciate the overview there. That's really helpful. Well, Raul, this has been a great dive into San Antonio, into what you guys do, into multifamily. If somebody listening wants to reach out and engage you guys, what's a good avenue for that?
Well, you can always go to our website, which is www.patelgaines.com. Patel Gaines. at the same with on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We're pretty active on LinkedIn. And, you know, you can always give us a call at 210-460-7787. Also, we are a true statewide firm. We have physical offices in both in San Antonio, Fort Worth, and in Houston. So they're not satellite offices that we, you know, by appointment only. These are fully functional offices as we have grown our firm to be a true statewide firm. Again, from the property tax perspective, it helps to have. We're the only Texas-based property tax law firm with physical offices in the three major metros. Some of the firms are either based out of Austin or based out of Dallas, most of them, where we have physical locations in all three. That helps a lot, having local presence for you know, certain disputes that you may have. And so that's a little bit more about our offices.
Yeah, that's perfect. Well, congratulations on your success and wish you continued success. And again, thanks for joining me today. I really enjoyed the conversation, Raul. We'll be in touch soon.
Likewise. Thank you for having me on. And as said, if I could leave one last note.
Absolutely.
I love the industry that you're in. And I continue to wish you guys and your listeners continued success. I think it's something that I have not seen in most industries. There is a lot of youthful energy. There's a lot of sharing of information and knowledge. You know, just like this podcast. I mean, you're sharing with people who are wanting to be, you know, either your partner or your competitor, however you want to look at it, right? You're giving them information and knowledge. And whether it's through social media, through podcasts, through conferences that are happening with folks. I love it. I think it's such a cool industry. You know, that and not because of what you do. I mean, real estate, whether you're doing office or something else, I've never seen anything like this. And so I just want to say, you know, kind of want to give kudos to you and others like you that are sharing their knowledge and their resources with others. In most industries, you don't see that. So I just kind of want to give you whatever you want to call it. I find that to be impressive what you guys are doing.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think, you know, so many good things that happened for our firm, and I've seen it happen to countless other people, has just kind of come through, started with the seed of a relationship, whether that's a partner or an investor or, you know, maybe it's an attorney or an insurance broker or, you know, some kind of connection there. And it kind of goes both ways. That's one of the things I love about multifamily is you can put a team together and go do a big deal, right? Where versus some of the smaller real estate stuff, you're really out there as kind of a solopreneur, hoofing it and doing a lot of the work yourself. The multifamily is a team sport and I love it. I mean, I love being an operator. I love being a passive investor in other people's deals. I mean, the whole thing. So yeah, there's that component of competition, but I think you get a lot more done through kind of a cooperative approach. And I've really seen that over the years for myself and a lot of other people. So it makes it a lot of fun too, to your point. It makes it a really fun and interesting industry to be involved in. So I appreciate that feedback.
Likewise. Take care, man. Best of luck. If you need anything else, don't ever hesitate to reach out. And thanks for all the listeners that are listening in.
Awesome. Thanks, Raul. Have a great one.
Take care, bud.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.